This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for your smartphone, tablet and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international programme of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. Want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Monuente Reme. I played Ichev on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, are...
Kay Shaw and...
Zachary Fruling.
Well, grab your Cotiscot boards and your cowl toe, because today we are going to be discussing hobbies on Voyager!
Yay!
I love hobbies. Are you guys into hobbies? Do you guys have a lot of hobbies?
I have about 4,000 hobbies, and I can't keep up with them all.
I have hobbies that I don't have time for anymore, and that's sad.
Yeah, I used to do a lot more in the way of hobbies than I have time to do now.
Stupid life getting in the way.
We should all share one. Like, what's a hobby that you don't have time to do or you just wish you did more but you don't do anymore?
Photography.
Oh, yay!
I'm going to certify myself as like a card-carrying dork here, but...
We already knew that.
I love playing with model trains. And I never get a chance to do model trains. I never have the room. I never have the time. I never want to spend the money on it. And I never do it.
Do you not do it at Christmas around your tree? Even?
I don't.
Aww.
Nope.
When I was a kid, my dad used to have like a model train set up in our attic. And that was cool. I remember having that when I was a kid. It wasn't huge, but it was pretty cool.
Who on Voyager would be the biggest model railroader? Like, how come we don't see anyone playing
Tubal.
With
Neelix.
Neelix.
Couldn't you see him with his little engineer hat?
That is the bonding project that Tuvok and Neelix have been missing.
It's not like a chef's hat.
No, but he's good with hats.
Yeah.
So you could see him with the little engineer hat.
I could picture Tuvok kind of playing with model trains, like sitting there in his
Absolutely.
Quarters with the lights turned down. He's got his little yep. Vulcan meditation, his hands together, and his trains going around in circles, and he's dwelling yep. on it. Yeah.
I don't know that his trains would ever move. He'd be making the landscaping and the layout just perfect, just yeah. right. And he'd never get there, so the train would never move.
I'm like the exact opposite. I like just watching the trains run. I don't care so much about the scenery. I just like watching the trains go.
I agree with you, Suzanne. I can imagine, too, about like measuring his tree placement by the millimeter and his little...
Oh, yeah. And the little tiny people.
Yeah.
Little Vulcans.
That's amazing.
And then he'd have this one Talaxian laying on the tracks for when the train does move.
Brilliant.
This sounds like some sort of like psychology experiment. Like when kids are in therapy or something, like play with the dolls, you know, to psychoanalyze them. Like Tuvok would put the little Talaxian on the railroad tracks. Like,
yeah.
Whoa, what does that say about Tuvok? Oh, he screwed up.
Well.
Yeah, maybe what it is like get the entire crew of Voyager to build a little model railway. Or railroad, as you guys say. And depending on how they build it will tell us about their personality.
Well, do you think they'd build like a little tunnel to take it onto the bridge and then like, you know, goes through the other tunnel and leaves the bridge, like a little circle around
yeah.
the bridge?
It goes through the Jefferies
like
tubes.
Once an hour or something?
They could just have a model railway that just went around the whole of Voyager. Like, round
and
the bridge.
And then Q would show up.
Through the sounds wall like, of the ready room. Writing round it. The ready room.
Sounds like Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Mr. Tuvok's neighborhood.
Amazing.
Remember Mr. Rogers with the little trolley? It'd be like yes. Mr. Tuvok's neighborhood.
He's putting on his cardigan and changing his shoes.
I was just thinking when we talked about our episode about real life, where the doctor has his mini house on his desk. He could ride the mini railroad home.
He's got to catch the 5:15
from the bridge back to sick bay.
Rather than deactivate EMH, it's like miniaturize EMH. Get on the train and go to his quarters.
That'd be so awesome. I love this idea. I like this.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to literally derail the whole conversation with trains.
But
you didn't derail it, you enrailed it. If that's even a word.
It is now.
I got us on the rails.
You did.
Tangent the journey.
Tangent the journey. We started off with a tangent again.
No, this is the thing. I mean, like, some hobbies have from the 20th century and 21st century now have persisted into the 24th century, and some have kind of died out. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of people playing with model trains.
Although you do see people doing photography. You know, the doctor yes, is the into doctor. His...
Holo photography.
Holo camera.
His gigantic holo camera. That thing is bigger than his head.
It's like an old-fashioned Kodak box camera, you know.
My giant digital camera. It was huge.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Polaroid cameras, you know, where they print it out the front.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had one of those.
It reminds me
totally.
Of those.
I loved those.
Yeah.
Man, you gotta shake it like a Polaroid picture.
Yep.
Well, no, I actually really find this interesting that some hobbies seem a bit more universal and some are a bit more tied to particular time periods or particular personality types that maybe don't persist into the future. I don't know, but it seems like some hobbies just aren't a thing anymore in the 24th century.
Yeah. We don't see a lot of people knitting in the future.
Didn't Janeway knit?
Yes! She talks about knitting a blanket, doesn't she? For Sam Wildman. Yes, you've reminded me of that, actually. You never actually see her do it, though.
But she talks about it, so that's good enough for me.
Yep.
So Janeway knits.
She does knit. I wonder when she finds time.
Maybe she does it on the bridge when it's quiet. She pulls out her knitting bag and her needles and just...
That's a fabulous mental image.
She's like, Chakotay, hand me that bag behind you. I need to knit.
Captain, there is a subspace anomaly off the port bow. Hang on, let me finish my row.
Yeah, that's actually what happens in Captain Janeway's quarters after dinner. Chakotay sits down in his chair and he whittles something. And Captain Janeway sits down and she knits. They're like a pudgy little old couple sitting down doing their things together.
I could see that. Really?
Yeah. He's there whittling a teapot. She's knitting the tea cozy. Or coffee pot.
Well, other 20th century hobbies seem to have persisted into the 24th century. I mean, Seska was into, like, space ham radio, talking to the Kazon.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
So is that why you identify so well with Seska? It's the ham radio
connection. You guys thought I wasn't going to be funny there.
He is Mirazak. We established this some time ago.
He's not twirling his mustache, though.
I'm not sure that classes as a hobby, really. Selling Voyager out to the Kazon didn't really count as a hobby, although I don't think we see Seska do anything else.
That's more of a lifestyle.
A yeah, it's more of a life choice. Lifestyle. Yeah.
What other hobbies are, like, just not a thing in the 24th century? And on Voyager, by extension. I mean, people are always going to like music, so we see music on Voyager.
Fishing. Yeah. We don't see anybody fish.
Well, on Deep Space Nine we do. We see Sisko and Jake fish.
But not on Voyager.
No fishing on Voyager, that's true. I sort of feel like Tom Paris when he in the Waterworld episode, why doesn't he like bust out his fishing pole?
And start whistling the Andy Griffith theme.
He's all about saving the fish, not fishing the fish.
You gotta fish the fish.
He's too ecological for fishing.
So is Tom Paris Andy Griffith or is Tom Paris Opie?
Oh, he's Opie. He is so Opie.
I sort of figure, like, Harry Kim is more like Opie. But...
Yeah, Harry Kim could be Goober.
Kay's like, I've never seen this show. That is way too
What
American.
Are we talking about?
You've never seen the Andy Griffith show?
No. Who's Andy Griffith?
If I could whistle, I would whistle you the tune. But I can't whistle.
I can't do it very well. I think one of the things I love about Voyager, though, is they seem to have so much fun with their hobbies. I mean, we see hobbies on other Star Trek series. We see Captain Picard fencing and Data painting, but they're having lots of fun with their hobbies on Voyager.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
By comparison.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's just because, obviously, they have downtime, don't they? It's like they have periods of time when there's not a lot going on. And I don't think we get that so much on the other series because they're always sent on the next mission or whatever.
And they don't get much shore leave. So they have to come up with something to entertain themselves.
Echoes of the Void could only happen in Voyager.
Exactly.
Oh, Harry.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear your clarinet.
I wish we saw him playing his clarinet more, though. Because in Next Gen, we see Riker, like, playing his trombone in Ten Forward, like, quite a lot. Mm-hmm. Not all the time, but we see more of people putting shows on for the rest of the crew on TNG, like Riker with his
classical music and light jazz.
I'd like to see Harry like doing a concert, or
I would like more of Harry and the Kimtones.
Yeah,
not just Harry by himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
He needs the Kimtones behind him.
Yeah,
because if it's just Harry, I really don't care.
I still really feel aggrieved that we heard about Talent Night and we never got to see it.
I am still mad about that.
I wanted to see
the Dying Swan.
Yes, I very much wanted to see the Dying Swan. And I'm sure Harry would have played his clarinet. And we know that Tuvok read some Vulcan poetry.
It would be really interesting. Seriously, it's interesting here in the real world whenever this happens, when people are confined in a certain place or they're, you know, stripped of all their comforts or, you know, isolated in some way. There's emergent behavior emerges. People will come up with something interesting to do to keep themselves amused, and they do that on Voyager. Mm-hmm. They do it in the real world. You put people in a boring office building and they're going to, you know, develop some crazy emergent behavior to kind of pass the time and make life go a little bit.
Yeah, well, Tom Paris was really good at that.
Tom Paris was great at that.
He was great with his 3D movies to involve more of the crew. But I have to wonder, did he branch out from the 3D and get into like weird, crazy kind of science fiction horror? Did he also bring in like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes? Or maybe the Sharknado movies? Were those going on too?
Oh, and now I'm just wondering whether or not Tom Paris made a Sharknado holodeck program.
That would be awesome.
Duck!
Oh, here comes another one!
Watch out, Captain! It's a Sharknado!
Or snakes on a plane. How about snakes on a plane?
Snakes on Voyager!
Snakes on a shuttle? I don't...
I'm sure he'd find a way to make hollow emitters in enough of the ship that he could just have snakes just invade. You could just imagine, can't you?
Can you imagine the practical jokes that would occur if there were hollow emitters on the entire ship?
Yeah. So I'm just imagining at night they're all so bored, and then Tom Paris just like, I'm just going to do a reenactment of snakes on a plane and just like release snakes all over the ship.
That's awesome.
That is so something that he would do as well.
Even holographic venom can kill Kay.
Absolutely. Well, it can kill the Doctor anyway. Doctor's got to watch out. We're all on the bridge. Everybody's like, oh, it's fine. They're just holographic while still running away. Then we just get this little projection of the Doctor projecting up from sickbay. And he's like, what did you do? And he's like, this bite in his face is just like twice the size it's supposed to be.
I can picture Tom Paris now.
The snake is still attached to his face.
Yeah.
He's like, computer, replicate a whoopee cushion on the captain's chair now.
Mr. Paris, that was unacceptable.
Not that old chestnut again.
I can just imagine they have a period of time where it's really quiet and they're all just trying to one-up each other on practical jokes. Because we do know that actually the cast themselves...
Mm-hmm. They did that.
Kate Mulgrew has talked on numerous occasions about how Robert Duncan McNeil and Robert Beltran used to just terrorise her with all the practical jokes. So I'm sure that would translate over into the crew.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, I guess in all fairness, practical jokes aren't quite the same thing as a hobby, but it's a perfectly fine way to pass the time. Makes the time go faster for sure.
Well, it would tie into one of his hobbies, which is holodeck programming.
Mm-hmm.
20th century practical jokes. He's an expert on that too.
Yeah.
Classic cars. Yeah. Whatever. Whatever happened in the 20th century, he was there.
He's mastered the classic pull my finger.
You only fall for that once.
I think with Tom, They basically just created a character so that they could just use all the 20th century stuff they had lying around on the set. That's what I assumed anyway.
Whatever they had laying around the Paramount lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tom had that. Tom had his TV.
We got this extra toaster. Where could we put it?
Oh, Tom's quarters.
I do like how they managed to incorporate Tom's TV, though, into the plot of one of the episodes. Because Memorial, I love how they incorporate that into the plot in Memorial.
How come you never see, like, video games? Gaming culture, console type? Why? How come Tom doesn't have, like, an Atari or a Nintendo?
Because it went really bad on the Next Generation episode, so we're going to go there again.
The game? You're talking about the game?
No.
Like, oh, this can go bad really fast.
All mobile games are now banned from Starfleet ships.
I mean, I guess you do get, like, little simple computer games, but not, like, video games, you know?
Yeah, it's something I've actually wondered before. It's kind of been replaced by the holodeck, same as TV has.
They did get that one doohickey from the planet.
Oh, the one where you had
to push
like,
the sides.
Press all the lights. Yeah. And
it was like a weird game of Simon. So they had that, and that was kind of handheld.
I guess the holodeck takes the place of video games.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. But it's more active, isn't it? It's like you've actually got to be running around.
It's like a VR game.
It's LARP! Everybody LARPs in the future!
I feel like if Tom Paris was going to make a holodeck version of a video game, it would be like the movie Pixels with like these 3D blocky Missile Command, Centipede, Space Invaders coming down.
Yeah.
Well, they had Worst Case Scenario, which was like a video game.
It was like a video game. It even had a little cutscenes and Seska cutscenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had Worst Case Scenario, and then they had the one that the Doctor did, didn't they, as well?
Photons Be Free, that one.
I guess the Doctor's holographic family is a bit like The Sims.
Definitely. That is The Sims.
Certainly at the beginning it was. Anyway, they were very Sim-like.
But I sort of don't think of these as like hobbies. I sort of think of hobbies as activities that require things. Most hobbies that I think of as like real sort of pure hobbies, they require stuff. Like knitting requires your knitting needles and yarn, and ham radio requires your radios, and model trains require your trains, and Chakotay's whittling requires wood to whittle.
Wood.
Right. So like what are the tinkering things that people do in the 24th century?
Janeway paints. You need paint. Or is she just doing that to hang out with Leonardo? Well, Chakotay also does sand paintings, so you need sand.
I guess Kes has a thing for dirt.
Eating doesn't count as a hobby, Zach.
What, eating doesn't
count? Eating.
Says who?
Well, for some people.
Well, there goes my night. Thanks a lot.
True. You said Kes had a thing for dirt, but, you know, we know she likes to eat dirt.
I meant more like growing things in aeroponics.
I know. I was being silly. We never do that onto the journey.
Never.
We're never silly.
No, never.
We're very stoic.
But yeah, she does like growing stuff. It's kind of a hobby, isn't it? Even though it's sort of also
it's her job. But
yeah, but it's a hobby as well, kind of.
Yeah, but she really likes it. I mean, isn't that everyone's ideal is to take your hobby, your passion, and turn it into your job? Isn't that awesome?
That would be nice.
On the other hand, you can ruin the thing you love by doing that.
Yes, you can.
Definitely, you can make it into a chore instead of something you enjoy.
Right. So, but Kes seems like she's really authentic about it. She likes to grow stuff, and she works in aeroponics, and she does the medical stuff with the doctor. She's learning physiology, and she loves that.
I was going to say the medical stuff I see more as her job, and aeroponics I see that's her hobby.
Yeah, because she did kind of volunteer to do that, didn't she, and say that she'd do it rather than being given it as a thing to be doing. So, yeah, I guess that is her hobby. Plus, she also, I imagine, although we don't really hear so much about this, I imagine she grows some, like, pretty flowers and stuff in there as well.
That's totally in our headcanon. Kes grows pretty flowers.
They might be edible flowers, too.
Yeah, like stuff you can put in a salad.
Yeah.
Well, Kes is just so sweet. Right? Of course she grows pretty flowers in aeroponics. Kes is so sweet.
That's when she's not, you know, like, burning them with her mind.
Yeah.
And then she burns the petals off them with her mind.
It's like an extreme form of he loves me not.
Yes. Zap, 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 he loves me. Zap, he loves me not.
Yeah. Well, while we're talking about flowers, actually, we do learn about Tuvok and his orchids.
And his orchids.
His prized Vulcan orchids, yeah.
That seems like a very Vulcan thing to do, growing orchids.
In between his meditation and his Kalto.
You can ask this question about any hobby. Why does anyone like anything, right? There's a sense in which it's totally arbitrary, but why First of all, why gardening? And then why orchids? There's other kinds of flowers. Why does he like orchids? Does he have a Georgia O'Keeffe thing going on?
I think it's the genetic manipulation of the orchid that he likes.
Yeah, because there's so many different varieties, aren't there? Orchids are like the roses of the 24th century in that way. Although we do get roses as well.
Oh, we get peace roses.
Yeah, we do. I knew you were going to try and slip that in there.
When you said rose, I had to.
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly sailing by moonlight is still a hobby in the 24th century.
It is. That, on the holodeck, though.
With champagne and your hunky first officer. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. That's the best hobby.
It actually happened on the original series with Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Sulu. Captain Kirk said, come sail by moonlight. And Sulu said, I'll bring the wine.
Oh my.
Oh my.
Oh my.
Have some wine, Captain.
Have some wine.
Oh boy.
Come to my boat, have some wine.
Throwback to our interview with Manu. What is it about hobbies? I mean, humans, we love our hobbies. Humans can't, even the most boring people I know are interested in something that really gets them excited.
It's a way to decompress. It's a way to get away from the daily aggravation that you have to deal with. No matter what you do, no matter what job you have, there's always something that just niggles at your brain and it's like, gotta get away from this. Let me go do this. Let me go sing karaoke. Let me go dance. Something to just decompress.
Yeah, because it's like whilst you're doing it, you're not necessarily thinking about the to-do list, as it were.
So are hobbies like frivolous waste of time? Or are they an important, valuable part of our human and by extension alien experiences?
It depends on what they are. I wouldn't say any hobby was a waste of time, personally, because I think if you're enjoying if you're enjoying yourself, then you're never wasting time, is how I feel, personally. Exactly. Any minute that you're enjoying yourself in life is a minute well spent. So if it's something you get something out of, even if it's perceived as frivolous by other people, it's still valid and important to you. You know, that is life. Enjoying life is life. That's how I see it. But some hobbies, I mean, can be really constructive. It depends what you're trying to do.
I could kind of picture, if Captain Janeway were a little more serious, I could picture her saying to someone like Tom Paris, hey, Tom, you know, rather than spending your time, wasting your time making those Captain Proton holiday programs, you really could be trying to work on a way to get us home a little faster.
That's just mean.
I know it would be mean, but, you know, isn't it kind of true?
Because that would be working him 24 hours a day. He gets no rest, no time to himself.
Yeah, and I think him doing that means that he's more able to do his job when he is on duty because, like Suzanne was saying, you know, he's decompressing, he's de-stressing, he's getting away from the situation that they're in and the fact that they have to do this job every day, day in, day out, and they never get a day off.
And he's studying sociology.
Yes. Although in a less obvious way than Seven of Nine. Yes. If you're not interested in human relationships, why have you got however many gigaquads of data?
That's her hobby.
Yep.
She's a peeping Tom. That's her hobby.
She's got quite a collection of digital files on her space iPad.
Yeah. But then, you know, some of the things that she likes to collect, they're things everybody's aware of, at least if they're anywhere near Deck 9, Section 12.
I am kind of intrigued by this idea that some hobbies that require value to things like coin collecting and stamp collecting, you know, the collecting kind of hobbies where you collect something because it's rare and valuable, that kind of loses its meaning in the 24th century. If money doesn't have its meaning anymore, then people don't collect stuff.
Well, that and you could just replicate them.
Yeah, that's right. You can replicate anything, right? So
who needs the inverted Jenny when you can replicate it? And that would be a stamp, people.
Collecting would still be a thing, though, because you could collect things that you can't replicate.
Ooh, then who would be collecting action figures?
Who?
I can see Tom having a collection of, like, G.I. Joes.
Naomi.
Naomi. Well, she has that really hideous, scary, creepy Flotter doll.
That is true.
I mean, really, that thing was creepy.
Who needs action figures when you can bring them to life on the holiday?
Flotter was pretty creepy, yeah.
I mean, not even just the character Flotter, her doll, her stuffed Flotter, that thing was creepy.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine her having, you know how you get those little mini action figures, but you get them in packets and they're like randomized and you just buy like whatever and collect them. I can imagine her having a series of Flotter figures like those.
Didn't Captain Janeway used to play those programs, right? So she's got the action figures. locked away in her closet.
Do you think she would have taken them on Voyager with her?
I don't think she would have brought them with her.
Why not?
You could see her in her ready room playing with Flotter and Treevis.
She was only going on a 3-week mission, Zach. What does that say about Janeway if she did bring them with her?
Hey, I still bring my teddy bear on a 3-week vacation. What are you talking about?
I have a penguin. I have a stuffed penguin, and he comes everywhere with me.
Oh, yeah, I've got a
What
I've
is his name?
Bear.
Pippin.
Pippin the penguin.
Yes.
I've got a teddy bear, Freddy the Teddy.
Freddy the Teddy, that's so cute.
I had a job where I dressed as a penguin.
Wow.
At SeaWorld, I was Pete or Penny Penguin, depending on the day.
You don't get a lot of security blanket behavior in Star Trek in general or on Voyager, but I'll bet you I would put money on the fact that Harry Kim has slept with his clarinet.
I don't think so. I think Harry's got a whole load of stuffed animals.
He's got a blankie.
He's got a blankie? No, no. You don't he's
got a blankie.
You can't picture him like cuddling up to his clarinet at night?
Nope. Hands down, that boy has a blankie.
No, I think he's got a blankie and a whole series of stuffed animals, all of which his mum made.
And all the stuffed animals are sitting on his bed.
Yeah.
Waiting for him to come
back. He has to sleep with all of them. You know, again, memorials come up again. You know in Memorial when they're all coming back in the shuttle and they're all getting really fractious with each other? Well, it's because Harry's taking all his stuffed animals and there's no room for anyone else's stuff.
You know at Prixen time, Harry Kim is wearing the sweater, the Prixen sweater his mom made him for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, we always pick on Harry Kim.
Oh, poor baby Harry.
We're so mean to Harry.
But he makes it so easy.
Yeah, he does. Little baby Harry.
I'm not being a hypocrite. I got my teddy bear. I'm good.
Yeah, I got my teddy bear. I'm all about the teddy bears.
I have a bunch of stuffed elephants.
Yay. I'm all about the teddy bears. I have tons of teddy bears.
So as we think about hobbies in Voyager, they're the obvious ones. Like, we know Chakotay likes archaeology, and we know the Doctor likes opera. What are the ones that we're just going to overlook if we don't take the time to think about it? The little hobbies we just see once or twice. The weird ones. There's got to be some weird thing that we're overlooking.
Seven, enjoying cooking.
She does give cooking a go, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when all that whole thing happens...
The stuff we don't like to talk about.
The stuff we don't talk about, yeah.
She's like, I watch space YouTube and I found these great recipes.
Yeah.
For you, Commander.
I mean, cooking is Neelix's hobby, really. I know it's also his job.
And it's his job,
cooking
right?
Is
yeah.
His job.
But it's also his hobby. He loves it. I don't know about obscure hobbies that we might forget, but I know Suzanne mentioned it right at the top of the show, but I think we should talk a little bit about Cadiscot because I think it's the only time we see it in Star Trek, isn't it? It's like a Voyager thing. I love that.
Oh, yeah. And I love that Seven embraces it. She really enjoys it.
Yeah, and I also love the fact that we have absolutely no idea how to play, what the rules are, or what the objective of the game is.
And I want to know.
It's Voyager's equivalent of a chess club, let's be honest.
It kind of is, but it's interesting.
But we know how to play chess.
It's like two players, but they have three different colours, don't they? It's like red, orange, and green, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's like a weird checkers or tic-tac-toe or something.
Boy, if you're colorblind, that would really do a number on you.
It would. That is true. People are obviously not colorblind in the future, Zach.
No, but they can be really blind.
They have special visors for colorblind people. Yeah.
They just have a special version of Cadiscot for Geordi where it like... has a different magnetic resonance or something so that
so
you can see it.
I gotta say, I haven't given a lot of time to the game Cadiscot in particular. Like, what stands out to you guys? Like, what is awesome about Cadiscot?
I just really like that they've just made it up completely for Voyager. And we don't hear anything about, like, is it a human game or is it a Katarian game? Is that where Naomi's got it from? You know, where does it come from? And
is it a Borg game?
Is it
Talaxian? Yeah, how does it work? I just think it's fascinating. We get it. And it recurs several times. And we have this really, like, very visual image of this board with these things on it. And we see it. And, like, if you saw a picture of it as a Trekkie, you go, oh, that's a Cadiscot board. And yet we've no idea how the game works.
I may be way out in left field here, but I always, in my head canon, it was a Talaxian game. But I could be totally making
maybe
that up.
Maybe it is. Yeah.
It could be.
Do we see Neelix then teaching her how to play? I don't remember.
Well, I
know she does play with Neelix and she does play with Seven, but I don't know.
Don't ask me these things. Voyager's only my favorite show. I can't remember these things.
Or is it just a game that all children play in the 24th century?
Yeah, well, if it was, we'd probably see it on the other shows, I guess, because they have a lot of kids on the Enterprise in Next Gen.
It's safer than Breezy Squares.
When Seven was reliving all those people that she, or the Borg, had assimilated? And there was that little girl, and she played Kata Scott.
Right, yes, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I'd forgotten about that. We'll have to go and see if she plays it before Seven shows up. She's probably too young, though, at that point, isn't she?
Oh, no, she grows up really fast. Like, she does. Fast.
She does, in a way that makes no sense.
It just doesn't
reason,
add up.
For some reason, Samantha seems to be pregnant with her for, like, 2 years.
She does. I'm glad I'm not carrying a Katarian.
It is kind of fun to think about what 24th century board games would turn into, though. Like, you know, some of these games that we have now, like, I don't know, Operation and the Game of Life and Monopoly, do they persist into the 24th century? Doesn't seem like it. Well, I mean, they're all copyrighted, so they can't put them in.
Operation does, because we bought the Doctor that for Christmas, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. And the Doctor sings the song. The head bone's connected to the neck bone. The reticular node, right? So.
I could see people still playing Jenga.
Tuvok plays Jenga, like Vulcan Jenga. You know when he's doing that meditation thing? And he's, no, not Kalto, the other one. What's it called? You know when he's trying to pile all the blocks up when he's trying to do his calm thing in Meld?
Oh, gosh, what is that?
I can't remember what it's called, but it's Vulcan Jenga anyway.
It's Vulcan Jenga.
It is Vulcan Jenga.
But they play that by themselves.
Yeah.
It is a single-player game. Vulcans aren't big on group games.
Truer words were never spoken. Vulcans don't work well in groups. Yeah.
Nope. No, they don't play very well with the other puppies. I do really like, though, how we see Harry trying to learn to play Kalto.
And he wants to be so
only
good
at it. Because he was trying to get his mind off of a woman.
Well, yeah, but then we see him playing it again later, don't we? It's something they sustain over time. It's not like it's just for that one episode. We see him playing it again. And I just like that he's determined to beat Tuvok. It's a nice little aspect of Harry's personality that comes out there, I think.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if he ever actually does beat Tuvok. He's going to keep trying. That's awesome.
I do like that aspect of him. Yeah. That we get to see that Harry actually is quite competitive. He's actually quite competitive.
I can picture it now. Harry's like, one more game, Tuvok, one more game. He's like, good night, Ensign.
I said good night.
So the one thing I think that we don't see a lot of in Voyager that we do see, I think, a bit more in some of the other Star Treks is we don't see them doing a lot of sport. The one thing that comes to mind is Seven and Janeway playing Velocity.
Well, we see Harry and Tom in those, it almost looks like an ice hockey outfit. And I can't remember what game they were playing.
They do wear those hockey outfits, don't they? Maybe it was ice hockey. I don't know. But we see Janeway and Seven playing Velocity. And obviously Janeway's very good at Velocity. Mm-hmm.
What the heck do they do for exercise on Voyager?
Tuvok's
exercise regime.
Well, Chakotay boxes for exercise.
Yeah.
When he's not going crazy and boxing.
We do see Chakotay boxing, which makes sense for him as well, I think, as a character.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else we see sport-wise, though.
I mean, I guess we've seen B'Elanna do some physical stuff with the holodeck.
With the safeties off.
The skydiving thing. I'm going to assume there's a whole variety of different, like, physical holo programs and sport holo programs that they go do stuff with.
And Parisi Squares.
And Parisi Squares, yep.
And they got Velocity. We mentioned Velocity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to play Velocity. I think that looks like so much fun.
Well, next time you make it to the States, it's on like Donkey Kong.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of like laser tag, only harder.
I think of it more like racquetball.
Oh, yeah, racquetball, which we call squash.
Yeah.
Is that what you call squash?
I don't know whether it's exactly the same, but I think it's very similar.
Well, you guys remember back in the 80s when racquetball was actually a thing and popular and people cared about it and did it all the time. Remember in The Next Generation when they were playing space racquetball, Captain Picard and the human...
Oh, with that funky racket.
Yeah, with the funky racket. They were playing space racquetball.
I remember funky racket.
But that's because racquetball was a thing then. Now it's like all these gyms that they built have racquetball courts, but they're like tombs.
We see Bashir playing racquetball, don't we?
That's right. We do.
Oh, yeah.
He's like a champion racquetball player. Yeah, so we see that.
What an anachronism. No one cares about racquetball anymore.
Only clearly they do. Well, apparently they still play tennis. Now, Do we actually hear Janeway talk about how she plays tennis in the show, or is that just in Mosaic?
No. In Shattered.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I was just thinking about
yep.
that.
Yep.
And they've got, because they got the funky tennis balls and the funky rackets. The tennis balls that look like someone took a bunch of like Nerf darts and glued them together into a ball shape.
Okay, I'm thinking of something different. but I remember that too. But I remember Chakotay saying something to her.
About she said something about her tennis elbow. When she walked home in the rain, which happens in Mosaic. Yeah.
Wait, she says something about her tennis elbow in that episode, right?
She does mention the with that funky like five racket tennis racket.
That's why she has the special
racket. Yes.
When that thing grabbed her hair.
Well, if Captain Janeway has tennis elbow, apparently they still play tennis in the 24th century. So,
I mean, we don't know really whether it looks exactly like the tennis that we're familiar with, but they certainly do still play. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's got rackets, it's got balls, it probably has something like a net. It's probably like an electronic net, you know? Like, if you were going to design a 24th century futuristic tennis game, what would it be?
Yeah, well, you'd want it to be more electronic. You'd probably want the court to be electronic so that it could sense whether things were in or out, and you wouldn't need an umpire.
You would need a referee or an umpire. It's a referee. Yeah.
I'd want
a referee
the floor
umpire.
To be made out of lava.
A high-stakes tennis game.
Bring that back from when you were a kid, and, you know, the floor is made of lava, and you have to jump on the whole thing.
No, it sounds like Tron when they're on the gaming grid, and the floor kind of gets cut out from underneath them, and they fall down to their deaths. Derezed.
That's me just explaining how I think that, you know, future tennis could be augmented by technology. And Suzanne's like, I want the floor to be made of lava.
I want the tennis ball to be on fire, you know.
That would go along with the lava.
I want the tennis ball to be made of antimatter.
Antimatter tennis ball. Wow. 40 to 50% chance of explosion every time you hit it.
Explosions are good.
Explosions can be good. It depends.
Try cobalt tennis balls.
But they only have three of them.
Yeah, they only have three of them, but during the whole series, they use 10.
Where do they keep getting all those tennis balls? They ran out of replicator rations years ago.
Chakotay whittled them.
Hey! I think it would have been cool to see, like, a sports episode where they all get involved. You know, like, is it Take Me Out to the Hollow Suite from Deep Space Nine?
Sukansi.
Yeah, but they're not all... They get involved in watching it, but they're not involved in playing, are they?
You want a team sport on Voyager.
Seven is.
Yeah, Seven is, but I wanted to, I just wanted to see, like, that's great. I love that episode of Deep Space Nine where they all get the
baseball shirts. Well, let's make one up right now on the spot.
They've all got their names on the back of the shirts and everything. I love that.
Well, let's make one up right now. What are they going to play and what is their team going to be called?
Well, lava tennis, apparently. How about lava volleyball? That's more of a team game. I could see the crew of Voyager playing volleyball.
On Neelix's resort program?
Yes. Beach volleyball!
Oh, those awful swimsuits are coming back now. No.
It sounds like a bad episode of Saved by the Bell or something.
Crossed with Baywatch.
No, remember the beach episodes of Saved by the Bell? When they played volleyball?
I never watched it.
I'm sorry, is this another outdated reference? I'm sorry. So if they're playing beach volleyball in Neelix's resort program, what is their team name? Like, what are the teams?
Who's on which team? It's going to be two teams.
What would
it?
The teams be? Right.
Starfleet versus Maquis.
Yeah.
No, that's so first season.
To be fair, Neelix's resort program is quite second season.
We could easily hearken back to the first season with that.
So it's Starfleet versus Maquis, and what are the team names?
Starfleet and Maquis.
Starfleet and Maquis.
Really? That's all? That's the best you guys got.
Yes.
Unless you want to call them Jean Valjean and Javert. Yeah.
Ooh, Javert.
Yes, that's more creative. We're getting there.
Now I'm going to break into singing Les Mis.
So Team Starfleet are Javert and obviously the Maquis are Jean Valjean. You can see how that came up in conversation as well. And I can imagine both Janeway and Chakotay being very amused with themselves for coming up with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the Maquis would win because they'll play dirty. It's the Maquis way.
But would Janeway call Chakotay 24601?
Probably, yeah. 24601.
601.
Is Seska still around? Is Seska on the team? You know if Seska's on the team, she's cheating.
Lee from over on Earl Grey is going to love this because he's a huge Les Miserables fan.
Okay, now I'm just going through all the different songs of my head from Les Mis.
Yeah, Les Mis has an amazing soundtrack.
It does.
I can imagine the Doctor and Seven singing Les Mis, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Because we should talk a little bit about the Doctor and his opera and their singing and stuff. I do love the Doctor and his whole operatic thing. It just fits so well with his character.
Oh, it does. It's very showy.
Yeah. Just kind of pompous and self-important. Mm-hmm. I love it.
And a spectacle. He wants an audience, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I hadn't noticed.
The Doctor's not going to do a quiet, keep-to-himself hobby.
And again, I love how it's something that becomes part of the story on several different occasions. Because obviously, we see the episode where we get that race that starts to decide that he's like the god of opera.
That's so weird.
Virtuoso?
What is this music? We want the Doctor!
Yeah, so we get that one, and obviously we have Someone to Watch Over Me, which we've talked about quite a lot, where the music plays quite a big part in the
with a bouncing ball and everything.
Story. Yeah. And then we have the Tinker Tenor Doctor Spy episode. Where he's singing about
two rock.
Yes, exactly.
You are a Vulcan man. You have just gone without for seven years about.
It's amazing. That is one of my favourite comedy moments, I think, in the whole of Voyager. It's certainly a memorable one anyway.
That entire episode just...
Yeah, great.
I'm frankly surprised we don't see the Doctor and Harry teaming up, because they're musicians, right? Harry's got his clarinet and the Doctor sings opera. Why don't they team up and do a duet?
Exactly. This is what I mean about I wish we'd seen a bit more, like we see in Next Gen, where we're seeing these poetry readings and music recitals and all the rest of it. I would have liked
plays.
lots and lots of classical music.
Yeah, because of course they do the plays as well in Next Gen, don't they? Beverly Crusher with her whole thing that she does for a while.
I love that.
It's great. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more of that, and I think it would have made a lot of sense on Voyager to see that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can actually kind of picture the Doctor saying, I am a very model of a modern Major General.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep, I can picture it now.
Yeah, he's understudy to Commander LaForge.
Oh, beautiful.
Now I'm flashing to... like my favorite scene from Insurrection, where Picard's trying to get Worf to sing
with another bouncing ball. I'm just saying.
To get data. It's like, no. And just the look on Worf's
this
face.
This is not going to happen.
No. No.
Sing, Worf. Sing.
Oh, I love that movie. I love that movie.
It cracks me up every time.
I love that movie. In fact, while we're talking about Insurrection a little bit, we should probably mention to the listeners who haven't picked up on this, or maybe on the Babel Conference on our Facebook group, that we had a fantastic thread on the Babel Conference this last week that Brandon started, which was which was to do with people's unpopular Star Trek opinions, and I think it's up to about 1,200 comments. and it's been fantastic, and it's been really nice on there because everybody's been very respectful of everybody's opinions. We haven't had any arguments. You know, there's been a little bit of gentle ribbing, but we haven't had any arguments, and everybody's been great, and it's been really, really good fun. So if you haven't checked that out already, you should check that out.
And there aren't too many trolls on there. There are some trolls who are just throwing out some unpopular stuff just to see how people react.
Stop calling me a troll, Zach.
I meant Suzanne. Yeah, right. Suzanne's on there. Well, it's a given, so. It's interesting because there's a lot of bouncy ball singing stuff in Someone to Watch Over Me. You've got the Doctor in Seven with a little bouncing ball, Someone to Watch Over Me. Mm-hmm. Or what's the saying? You Are My Sunshine, right? You Are My Sunshine with a little bouncing ball. And then in Insurrection, we get Worf and Picard singing to the little bouncing ball, whatever song they're singing. HMS Pinafore, right?
Because I do like that we get later on in Equinox when they're singing Oh My Darling Clementine, this whole music theme comes back again.
I like when the Doctor goes, you, me, and a tuning fork.
I'm now trying to think whether or not, actually, generally speaking, we see hobbies in Voyager become more a part of the plot than we do in other series. Because, like, with the whole literature thing, because we know Janeway reads a lot and she lends books to Chakotay, and of course that becomes a big part of the plot in Shattered.
Yeah.
And we know that, obviously, we've talked about Kes's gardening, which becomes a big part of the plot, as you said in...
I was thinking her eating the dirt in Elogium.
Yes, but also...
And setting fire would be cold fire.
Cold fire, yes, thank you.
Well, this is one of my questions about Captain Janeway, because Captain Janeway, she's got the literature thing going on. You know, we know about the Dante thing, and we know about the Janeway Air thing she's got going on. But what else does she have as a hobby? I really struggled to think of a genuine hobby. Painting? Yeah, we only see that like once. Does that count?
No, we see that a few times. Her hanging out with Leonardo. Yeah.
Yeah, and we've talked about velocity as well, and tennis. So she's obviously very good at sort of coordinated sport type stuff.
She can grow some Talaxian tomatoes.
Even though she hates gardening. But she does
embrace
it.
Who wants to muck about in the dirt?
When you could be studying quantum mechanics, that's her other hobby.
Exactly.
Science is a hobby for Captain Janeway as well.
Unraveling the mysteries of the universe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to solve that theorem that dude's trying to solve down in the lower decks there.
Mortimer Heron.
Yes.
Yeah. Mortimer Heron.
Whatever the paradox was that he was trying to resolve or whatever it was. She's still chipping away at that at night.
And we do know that she likes music as well. I mean, I know everybody likes music, but we do learn about her liking music because we have the whole thing in Counterpoint.
Mm-hmm.
She knows her classical music well enough that she can spar with Kashi.
Yes, that's true.
And how she always wanted to play an instrument but never learned how.
Yeah.
Wait, that's not a real hobby, like wanting to do it but never doing it. That's not a hobby.
That could be a future hobby.
It's an interesting fact. It's not necessarily a hobby, but it's an interesting thing we learn about her.
Like 7 of 9, we learn she's got some interests, but they haven't quite turned into hobbies yet.
Yeah. Because also with Janeway, in Remember, we see her having a go with that...
With that dude touching
sphere
her back.
Sphere thing that you kind of move your hand over and it makes the sounds. So she's obviously got a passion and an interest in music. And she knits. We learn that she knits. Even though we don't see her doing it. I guess the one person we haven't really talked about, although we have vaguely mentioned them, is B'Elanna. I don't think we see B'Elanna doing a lot of hobby stuff, do we?
Reading her Klingon.
Klingon romance novels.
Klingon romance novels.
Yay.
That's about it.
Yeah, I think so. And I know we see her doing those sort of bits and bobs in Extreme Risk, but I don't get the impression that's stuff that she normally does.
Yeah.
Like, what are the titles of Klingon romance novels?
Women Warriors at the... She gives the title of the book, and I can't remember. It's Women Warriors. Women Warriors at the River of Blood.
There you go.
And that's a romance novel?
It's Klingons!
This is a good point, that B'Elanna's hard... It's hard to... come up with her hobbies. So she reads Klingon romance novels. She likes to turn the safety off in the holodeck. What else does she do?
I don't know. I don't know whether we really...
She makes fun of Tom.
But she's more of a, like, curl up and, you know, hang out in the warm bath kind of, you know. She doesn't really have hobbies. She does like to relax.
Oh, that's a Janeway thing.
No, B'Elanna likes to chill back.
The warm bath
curl
is
up
the
with
captain.
A good book. And
banana pancakes.
Banana... That's not, is that a hobby?
Banana pancakes.
We were talking about eating potentially being a hobby earlier on.
You just told me it wasn't.
I think she likes to watch movies. She likes to curl up with Tom and watch movies. And I know that's not really a hobby.
So she would be the one that would watch Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Wait, yeah. you're saying her hobby is to Netflix and chill with Tom?
Yeah.
Yes.
Netflix and chill with Tom. That's legit.
I buy it.
It's better than Neelix and chill.
So I guess they don't have Netflix in the 24th century, but do you think Tom and B'Elanna like curl up and watch A Briefing with Neelix on Tom's television?
I think they watch it in the mornings, yeah.
No.
Yeah. I do. I think they probably watch it and heckle.
Definitely heckle.
Like Rocky Horror? Like they throw stuff?
No, they Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, exactly. Like you get round with a group of mates and you just critique. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's a critic.
Well, it sounds like B'Elanna needs a new hobby if the best we have is space Netflix and chill and curling up with a Klingon romance
yeah
novel.
She does.
Well, she's a very busy woman.
Her hobby is engines. She's like Scotty in the original series. We just see Scotty when he's forced to take shore leave going, I just want to go read my engineering journals. She's like that. She just wants to go
and
read
drink.
Her engineering journals and drink scotch. Yeah.
Entering.
I think it's really cute that B'Elanna indulges Tom's hobbies mainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the classic cars.
He has
and
so
the
many.
Racing. And he has so many. He's a hobby dude. He's always tinkering with something, playing with something
new.
The
Camaro.
New. The Camaro, yes.
Yeah.
He's
Camaro.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. He's in the garage tinkering with a Camaro. And, you know, she's.
There's
kind
no
of...
room in their quarters for her to have any hobbies.
No, his stuff is everywhere.
Stuff everywhere.
But I think it says something about their relationship, though. She just puts up with his hobbies and even enjoys them with him a little bit.
Yeah, but I think, you know, when she gets him the TV, I think she likes the TV as well. Even though she doesn't really say it, you kind of get the sense that she likes getting in front of the TV with him with a big bucket of popcorn.
Oh, who doesn't like a big bucket?
See, I was wondering if she'd like it from an engineering standpoint, like checking out the old TV, the old technology with vacuum tubes and stuff.
The cathode ray
tubes. Cathode ray tubes and the vacuum tubes. That's an old TV. It doesn't just have cathode ray tubes. It's got vacuum tubes in there, too. Stone knives and bearskin technology, you know, from her standpoint.
It's been fun talking about women warriors at the River of Blood today, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
I agree, and I think most people, if they really think about it from the business standpoint, would agree that for Star Trek to compete with other properties in 2017, to connect with an audience that's not the diehard Star Trek fans that we are, it does kind of have to look like this because that's where the expectations are.
Right.
Standard orbit.
Who says we've been exposed to the vast amount of fictional history or history that exists within that timeline to be able to piece it together? It's huge. We don't even have our arms around of what's going on a daily basis around this planet. So if you take the whole size of the Federation, I think it could be very easy to plug and play this timeline there, enjoy something we've never heard of, never seen, that wouldn't necessarily impact the history that we already realized through the original series.
Warp 5.
There is a lot of dialogue or an exchange between the two of them where she implies very strongly to Archer that their relationship has evolved over the years. He asks, oh, really? How far has it evolved? And she kind of gives him a look.
The
original draft of the script, she actually gave him an answer.
The 602 Club.
I think that creates a great question we can dive into, the creator versus creation. Wayland has created David in these synthetics to help him on his quest. And his quest is this. He does not believe that human beings can be nothing but a random chance accident.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. Also, please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are lots of ways that you can do that. The best place to join us in the conversation is in the Babel Conference, our listeners-only discussion group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact, choose Message to a Trek FM Show, and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Well, speaking of contact information, Kay, when you're not in sick bay nursing your space tennis elbow, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
You can find me in the Babel Conference. I enjoy chatting to people there. I've been having a lot of fun this week. And you can also find me on Twitter. My handle is ChocoWeeble. Suzanne, when you're not trying to figure out what the heck the rules of Kadiskar are, where can people find you?
You can also find me popping into the Babel Conference now and again. Or you can find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8. That's the letter K, Janeway, and the number 8. Zachary, when you're not hanging out with Tuvok and working on your model trains, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek FM as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy, along with my co-host over there, Mike Morrison. You can always find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Frueling, and you can find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Star Trek and Voyager with me there.
Well, if you'd like to help to keep all of our shows coming to you every week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host and distribute these shows each month, and we really appreciate any support you can give us. We hope you'll join the team, and you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd also like to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of the To The Journey team from around Trek FM. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, our two executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Che Mutala, our Patreon manager. And a special thank you and a shout out to our three associate producers here on To The Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, and Richard Marquez.
Be sure to join us next week when we'll be podcasting while the floor is made of lava. But until then, this has been To The Journey.